Couple of quick plugs before we start today's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle is @NarbosPodcast. If you want to email us, our email address is narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Hit us up with your comments on future episodes of Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. And if you want to be on a future episode, let us know as well, and we'll try to set something up. You can also follow our show on all of the podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. So please give us a follow and subscribe on any of those sites, and you will be able to get us pushed to you every single week. The theme music for this show is brought to you by a band called Ew, You're a Girl and Girls Suck. They are a punk band from here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And their Bandcamp page is iagags.bandcamp.com. That's iagags.bandcamp.com. They used to watch Degrassi episodes when they took breaks from recording back in the 90s. Anyways, that's about it for the plugs. Let's get to this week's episode.
What's that, Linda? You don't like Degrassi anymore. We've moved on to my so-called life, you know, and that's a good thing, right? Yeah, that's what I thought. But you don't want to see that Emma around, do you, anymore? Because Emma's a bit of you're not a fan. Yeah, I agree with you, girl. But you know what we're doing this evening? We're jumping into another episode of everyone's favorite, especially Linda and the cat, of The Littlest Hobo. Can you believe it? I can't believe it. What a treat. What a treat we're having today. And I'm looking forward to it. Even Pussycat. Yeah, that's right, Sugar the Cat. And we're going to jump right in to it. But first, we have a bunch of friends, bunch of dog lovers here, friends of the animal kingdom in general. Let's see who we have out there this evening. Let's see. Let's roll it on up to the O-Town, the ho-o-o-o-o. Who put the O in the ho of the O-Town? Who is up there?
I did, baby.
There you
it's
go.
Me. Very horror. Oh, not horror. Ho. Very ho-ish.
Very horror. Excellent.
Sorry. Excellent. Wrong podcast.
You are who you are.
But hi, it's me. I am so excited that we are doing another Littlest Hobo episode. And if you want more of these, you should write to us and tell Alan.
Yeah.
Right now. Do it. I forget our email address. I'll let him tell it to you. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's me. We have a bunch of people here. It's going to be a fucking great show. So we should roll it on down to, we'll go down the 401, I suppose. Who do I hit first? Slip or Folly T? I guess.
Well, what direction?
I'm doing it. I'm going. Sorry. Nope. It's me.
You're in a mood tonight. I can tell.
I think, Courtney, that you like The Littlest Hobo because you're the littlest ho.
Ho-ho. That's right.
Ho-ho-ho. Hi, everybody.
I should have gone for that as a Halloween costume. Sorry, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, what did you go as?
Nothing.
Boring. Hi, everybody. I'm Alan. I'm in Toronto. And let's head further down the road, except it's down the QEW. To Oakville, the Hokeville in Oakville.
Nice.
Hi, everybody. It's Timbo the Clown. Here for all your celebrations. Now taking reservations for all kinds of events. Birthday parties, company openings, funerals, fulfilling all your fantasies. Email for bookings at TimboTheClown@AOL.com. Remember, clowns make the world go round.
Wow.
Wait a minute, I just blacked out. It just happened.
I legit thought that was a commercial. I was like, you know, so like, are we on Patreon or something? Like, wow.
I mean,
that was amazing.
If they keep
something
the school shut down, Tim, you're gonna have to find some clown work.
Well, they're already coming for the educational workers, they're gonna come for me next, so I need somehow to offset my income.
Your giant teacher salary that...
That's right. Yeah. What can I do with all that money?
Yeah.
Wait, barely afford the mortgage on my house.
Uh-huh.
But happy to be here, excited for the Lilith Hobo. This may be better than the first episode.
It might Maybe. Be.
It is an incredible half an hour.
Arlo.
I guess we're heading further west, across some prairies, over to the vagina from Regina.
Woo! Woo! Hey, everybody. I'm Arlo, and I'm still sick.
It's your gimmick now.
Yeah, it's totally her gimmick.
Yeah, it's sick, Arlo.
I got better for a few days, but I guess I like pushed myself too hard, so then I got sick again. It's not COVID, apparently. Continually testing negative, but I've been running a low fever all day, so I feel great. And it's fitting for this episode of The Littlest Hobo, which my husband described as a fever dream.
Oh, baby. We'll find out what's going on with the dog. First, I do have to clarify, there was zero HJs in our vacation with the boys, or as Arlo put it, circle jerks. I'm quoting from the transcript of the last podcast. So that's not canon. That never happened. This is canon that did not happen. So sorry, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Never. I feel like what happens at the cabin stays at the cabin, and probably that's what you would say if you were wanting.
So what you're saying, Ted? Not really a good vacation. Mm.
No, it was pretty good. You. I'll leave the viewers' minds up to it. Whatever they think happened. What happens in your mind stays in your mind.
Send us an email, darbosandbroomheads@gmail.com, if you want to speculate on what and Barry did on their cabin vacation in the woods together.
Please alone. Send us email fan
What's
fiction.
On your mind in the cabin?
Yeah.
And Darbos and Broomheads fan fiction. Barry and Ted, finally, they embrace. They're like, yes. I knew it. So we are going to talk about, if you all are okay with it, and even if you're not, I'll just go on a monologue about The Littlest Hobo. I'll mark out for it. So we're talking about The Littlest Hobo, and this episode is called Escape. And Escape came out. It premiered on television March 27th, 1980. And you can find it on YouTube. It's fairly easily findable. Put in The Littlest Hobo and Escape, or Season 1, Episode 20. It was added to YouTube about 8 years ago, and it has 31,000 views. It was directed by Alan Eastman, who directed our first one, Smoke. Okay, Smoke. So that was, and so we're in the same season. And writer one, Barbara Halloran.
And we also have a Degrassi: The Next Generation connection. Ooh, with Alan Eastman. Wait. He directed three. Degrassi: The Next Generation episodes. He directed Our House, where Sean moves into his own apartment. Don't Dream It's Over, where Terry gets creamed on a cinder block. And Gangsta, when Sean starts hanging out with Jay.
Yes.
Yes. So what do you think? Shall we jump into this fine episode?
Do it.
Should we remind people what Lilith Hobo is, in case they didn't listen to our last Lilith Hobo?
Yeah. Is anybody? Well, I would just say it's a dog who helps people out and sometimes solves mysteries. And then at the end of the show, he leaves. And then Courtney cries her heart out.
I do.
So
when you say the dog solves mysteries, this is the world's smartest dog. And in the Littlest Hobo universe, the smartest living thing is the dog.
Right? I'm watching the episode going, what's he doing now?
Yeah.
And I'm a human. I should know, but...
I was kind of talking to you guys as I was watching it, and the episode just kept getting wilder and wilder the more I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, I didn't watch The Littlest Hobo when I was growing up. It just wasn't, you know, I knew of it, but it wasn't really part of my regular watching schedule or anything like that. And like, the first one that we did, I had seen a few times just because it's the very first episode and whatnot, but like, I haven't really seen any episodes past that. So it was really fun to watch it for me. No idea.
Yeah, if you want my early thoughts, IMDb gave it a 7.7. I think that's 2.3 marks too low.
There you go.
I mean, Okay, so I'm going to clarify this by saying, like, I love watching these, and they're hilarious, and they're great to talk about, and it's totally worth checking out. This is a fucking terrible show. Like, it's really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the acting is bad, the writing is bad, everything is terrible. But, like, you have to watch, like... Look, I've never had a kid, so I've never had to go to a grade 4 school play where everybody just fucks up and is terrible, but I had the littlest hobo, so.
Yeah. It's kind of like have the suspension of disbelief, and then after you accept that, take like the biggest comically sized mallet you can get and hit yourself as hard as you can in the head, and you'll be good to watch this show. It's great. It's fantastic. So good.
Or smoke a joint, because that probably would work too.
Oh, yeah. That's true too.
Don't do drugs though.
Yeah, don't. Courtney says don't do drugs. Let's jump right in. So we open on Millbrook Federal Prison, because that's what it says across the screen. And we have a brooding vaudevillian piano score, like dunk, dunk, dunk. So we know we're in it.
And this prison. I read on IMDb is actually a water treatment plant in Toronto called the R.C. Harris Water Treatment Facility, and it is described as an architectural treasure designed in the Art Deco style in the 1930s, complete with marble entries and hallways. And apparently it still provides almost half of Toronto's drinking water.
Good job. So you're saying it wasn't in the Amish town that's north of Stratford, Millbank? That's not where it was set?
Not according to IMDb.
Oh man, they had me.
But I might be drinking water that is supplied by it. As
he goes,
like, this is prison water.
Well, yes.
Not in my mouth. So alarm bells ring, and there's an escape. Zutalols. So we see a beat up escapee going in. He's in prison clothes. He's run through a snowy forest. And if you haven't seen the episode, just picture the episode of The Sopranos called The Pine Barrens, where Polly and Christopher are stuck in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. It's one of Barry's. It is Barry's favorite Sopranos episode. So this is the exact same like look of it. It's not the same place, but it looks exactly like that.
Yeah, but this actor who is running through the forest, has he never run before in his life?
It's worth looking up just for the running.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God, yes.
He looks like Will Ferrell in like an SNL skit running.
Yeah. And then on top of that, he has to pass out, and it's like, okay, did you check his resume for running and passing out before you cast him? Because he can do neither thing, and he's doing both.
Right. He's eating up the scenery. Yeah. Does anybody know, Arlo, do you know who this is? I know this. I know who this is. Can you tell us, and what was his biggest movie?
Well, his name is Saul Rubinek.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what his biggest movie would be, but he was in a movie called Oy Vey, My Son is Gay, which
Oy Vey.
Interesting. But of note, he was a reoccurring character on the sitcom Frasier as a character named Donnie Douglas in many episodes. So if you recognize him, it might be from Frasier. He was also in True Romance, Unforgiven, Bonfire of the Vanities, Wall Street.
Ooh.
I Love Trouble with Julie Roberts and Nick Nolte.
Yes. I just realized, I think I remember him also from Frasier.
Mm-hmm.
Frasier. But then from Unforgiven as well.
Yeah. Yep. So he's been in a lot of stuff, honestly. He's had a long, sorted career.
Do you think he got hired because of his running in this? They were like, we need you. Clint Eastwood was like, hey, that running was real good. I don't know.
That looks like a man that's been sitting on a horse for too long. Fire him.
So as he runs through the forest, quote runs, we get a hazy picture flashback of a guy with a fantastic big pink collared shirt and a gun. Bum, bum, bum. And this all in slow motion.
Yeah, it's like...
Oh, yeah. It's like drugged out.
Yeah.
So our escapee finally collapses from exhaustion, and our furry protagonist strolls on over just out of nowhere. Like, this is how every show was. Like, it didn't say where he was before. He just shows up.
Yeah, what a stroke of luck. The dog happens to be in the same forest by the prison where the
escape. He was down the road. It's where he's always been.
Yes.
On goes. So he goes to tend to the man, and we hear a distant transport truck horn, and the little dog leaves the man to go check it out. We see a transport truck pulled over on the side, like on a side road, with the hood pulled up, and looks like he's having engine trouble. The dog goes back and rouses the escaped prisoner to lead him to the broken truck and its driver. So the escapee pulls a what turns out to be a plastic butter knife from his back pocket. And this is a very bad hold-up plan. And it's very, this whole episode is kind of like, I'm not so good at the, how you say, criminal life. So it kind of,
I mean, I got so many questions already. So
okay, hit me.
All right, so the littlest hobo, the smartest dog in the world, runs up to this person who's escaped prison, immediately knows that he is innocent, right? Like, I need to help the person. As one does when you see somebody running away from jail, you're like, clearly innocent, right?
Clearly.
The prisoner approaches this truck driver, who looks at him and says in the most matter-of-fact way you can imagine, "Oh, say, you're the fellow who escaped from prison."
And then he's like, "Well, hop aboard and bring your stray dog with you."
Yeah. The trucker gives a very quick thought on his views of the prison system, which is quite progressive for 1980. And then, the dog comes onto the scene, and the trucker is like, "Is he with you?" And prisoner's like, "Of course. I met him 30 seconds ago. This is my dog." And amazing.
They let dogs in prison now.
Yeah.
This trucker is an actor named Jack Mather. And of note, he played the station master in Anne of Green Gables when she's waiting at the station, which warms the cockles of my heart. But also, he played Old Man Clemens in Billy Madison.
Old Man Clemens hates shit.
Oh my god.
He called the shit poop.
He's gonna shit when he finds out it's shit.
Oh, he called the shit poop.
Don't tell me your business, devil woman. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Can we also review Billy Madison?
Already been done. Head over to the Mezzanine Sleepover and
that's right.
Find one of our episodes for Billy Madison review.
No, I know. I meant us.
Unfortunately, he passed away in 2006.
Oh, boo.
Yeah, he's stomping out shit, flaming bags of shit in heaven now.
Flaming bags of shit in the sky.
Yeah.
Helping stray convicts wherever he can.
So, further down the road, we find the escapee's name is Tim Reagan. And he has named the dog Mac. So, as they're driving down the road, we have some exposition, some storytelling here about some background. And Reagan's been on the cover of the newspaper a couple of months back because he was in prison for murdering his partner, supposedly. He says that he had two partners, one killed the other, and it was pinned on him, on Reagan, which the driver refers to as, oh, the old frame-a-roo, huh?
The legal term. That's
that little ditty.
Yeah. Just as calm as can be, by the way. Like,
this Rick Tim guy keeps mentioning over and over again he's a convicted murderer, and this guy's like, "You know what? But I like you, kid.
Mm-hmm.
You have moxie. And
fuck the prison system."
Yeah.
So we find out Sal is the framer. And Reagan found out while in prison that Sal was laundering mob money through the club, and Wally was the murdered guy, found out about it, and Sal had him killed. So Reagan's aim is to get the books, which should clear him of the crime.
Which is
the driver says.
Sorry, that's fucking amazing to me. Uh-huh. Like, I'm no money launderer. I've never laundered money. I've never, as far as I know, done anything illegal with money. But I would imagine that if I did, part of my plan would not be to keep written records in my office.
And that's why you don't have a successful business, Alan.
Yes, yes. But yes, the plan is find the written records of the crimes, and that will clear me of the murder.
Mm-hmm.
And as we find out, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
This is his plan. So the driver says, sounds like a long shot to me. And Ted agrees.
Yep. Yes.
This is not a great plan. So we come to the B plot of our show, which is smoking. Reagan says he'd kill for a cigarette. Well, not kill. More on that later. So he really wants to smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
or he's from prison. Maybe he thinks that's currency now.
How much do I owe you?
Exactly.
5 cigarettes. So we're driving down the road and so we have a roadblock, which again, Mac understands roadblock and checks, like police checks. So he alerts him. Mac paws at Reagan and pulls him into the back, basically. And the driver says, go change clothes. We pull up. The cops are there. Driver rolls down the window to talk to the police officer, who has, I noted, the craziest accent I've ever heard. He's like Canadian, Swedish, Irish, Icelandic.
It's so confusing.
He's like, I hail from every European country. All mixed together.
A convict escaped from the prison just outside of town. It's like, hey? What the? Hey? What the? I'm like, I know I have a bit of an accent, but like, I go, what is this? This is a potpourri accent.
I swear, every
accent.
Time these cops come on, Yakety Sack should be playing in the background.
They are wacky.
Yeah.
Fuck. Maybe he thought this was like his... We need to track down this actor. Arlo?
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, unless, like, there's nothing on the IMDb that lists, like, policemen. So unless the guy has, like, a name or something. Like, there were some characters on the IMDb that I couldn't identify who they were. So
you're saying this guy didn't have a large career. Color me surprised.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Oh, and also, this is the first person who is probably done in voiceover. Like, after they, because Saul or the guy, Reagan, is that's his actual voice in real time. But the police officer is not, like, it's overdubbed, but it's probably his voice. And we will see another person. Sal will also be, like, a taped after voiceover.
Wait, so the cop who can't talk is dubbed over on top of that?
I believe so. Like, his mouth doesn't really match up. And you look at somebody going, that's not coming out of you.
Yeah, they were like, the real take wasn't good enough. We need to redo it. And then they redid it. And this is what we got. And they were like,
that's what I mean. I'm like, God, how bad was it first?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, they like said, nailed it. Move on.
Nailed it.
And like everybody here, like I can't even replicate the accent, but anybody who tries on this podcast to replicate it is going to do well.
Yep. He does say he does have a quote in a second. So because they search the truck, the cops do. The driver and Mac exit, and Mac proceeds to jump in through the cruiser, the open police cruiser window, and steals a ticket book, to which the cop says, "Way, that's my ticket book." He says, "Chwum back here." And I actually have it spelled out that way because that's the way he says it.
Keep in mind that this is a check stop because someone has broken out of prison.
Uh-huh.
So the cops are there to check vehicles that are going through this check stop. The dog takes the ticket book, which I don't think is an important piece of equipment when it's, you know, in the grand scheme of things, runs off, and the cops abandon their post to run after the dog.
To him back here.
Stolen a notebook, essentially.
Yeah.
So the driver is totally loving this. Who, while the cops are distracted, lets Reagan out of the back of the truck, like the back of the cab, who has changed out of his prison jumpsuit into civilian clothing. Also, he has an unlit dart in his mouth.
and several more hidden in his afro.
Clearly. Oh, he loves it. He loves it. Loves the smoke. Will he smoke by the end of the episode? Stay tuned. So Reagan takes off. Meanwhile, Mac dumps the ticket book off the bridge, which opens and flutters to the ground below, much to the cops, gosh darning it. They don't actually say gosh darn it, but they're like, whoa, what? So, yeah.
You know the hobo hates cops because he didn't have to just throw it over the edge. He could have left it.
Yeah.
But he said, you know what? Fuck you, pigs.
Yeah. So while I'm totally on board with what the dog has done in 1980, at a different time, a very different time than now, the hero of the show has so far sided with the prisoner and fucked with the police.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
He's ahead of his time, man.
Yeah.
Eazy-E will be happy.
Right?
So, we get a mini montage of Mac running through the countryside and eventually gets to the city to catch up with Reagan, who's talking in a phone booth, and he's having a conversation, and he's talking to Sal. So we're introduced to Sal via phone. And Reagan wants his $10,000, his 10 G's that he's owed. Sal wants him to stop by the club. But Reagan says, forget about it, and wants to meet at the warehouse, to which Sal says, anything you say, Timmy, and hangs up.
Hey, Timmy, Timmy,
Timmaroo. The Timmeister, making copies.
Now, can we talk about his gang of hoodlums that are hanging behind him a little bit? Like, anyone see the white Michael Jackson?
How could I not? Did you see that fabulous red leather jacket? Dated,
but look like Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley.
And he's possibly like 40 something years old. I love it. It's fantastic.
What's even more amazing is Sal is on a phone in 1980. So he doesn't have the phone on speaker or video. It's just him. For those of you that don't know, you can't really hear the conversation. And so, except unless you're the one on the phone. So everybody sitting around Sal, his little gang, are listening to nothing.
Waiting for the update.
Yeah.
Well, the lead henchman guy, his sort of right-hand man guy, that's an actor named Angus McInnes, and he was in Star Wars.
Yes.
He played Gold Leader. He
played Obi-Wan.
In Star Wars.
Alec Guinness. Right?
Yeah, amazing. That's right.
They were just spelling it wrong.
But I was just like, Star Wars? Like, that's iconic. But yeah, he was in Superman 2 and Bob and Doug McKenzie, Strange Brew, Eyes Wide Shut, Hellboy, Judge Dredd. He was in the Edison Twins.
Oh, yes.
Oh, look at those Edison Twins.
As a character called Uncle Ted.
Oh, again, hey, everybody, welcome to our Boston Brewmans podcast. This podcast episode about Littlest Hobo.
Sal is wondering what he should do about Reagan, and his henchman's like, search your feelings. So.
Crossover.
Uh-huh.
So Sal, in a very, very overdubbed voice, says that it's their civic duty to return this convict back to the authorities. And he's very pleased with himself. Like, yeah. There's three other gang members, which we talked about. The Michael Jackson era red jacket is fantastic. I have that noted. Love it. Reagan steps out of the phone booth. We're back there. And he's surprised by Mac, and and Reagan says, great, I could use all the help I can get. So looking at a dog, it's like, I think Reagan has some mental problems, because he's going like, a dog is here to help me. Like, I've never looked at my dog Glenn and go, thank God you're here to help me. Yeah. So we see this phone booth is right across the street from the gang's headquarters, and they have this beautiful mint green, I don't know if it's a Cadillac, but it's like it's one of those big old boats from the 70s, and it's the most beautiful color. Fantastic. Like institutional mint green. Beautiful.
I was really hoping someone knew the make of the car, but I guess not, eh?
Maybe a Lincoln? That sounds right.
Yeah, let's just call it.
Sure.
I'll look into it.
Thank you.
So
she Ted, wrote Gearhead.
So, Ted, you say that it's funny that he's happy the dog is there.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as the gang leaves, he goes to sneak into the office. But oh no, the gate to the fence is locked. And he's like, basically, oh no, what do I do? And then the dog jumps the easily jumpable fence, and he's like, oh yeah. So,
yeah.
Like, at what point should have Hobo just said, you know what, you're not worth it?
Yes.
I'm smarter than you.
Like, I'm doing too much work here.
Yeah, he also says to the dog, okay, we're looking for ledgers.
That's right.
He's assuming the dog can help him.
Yeah.
And Mac finds a ledger, but then Reagan finds it and just says, no, it's the regular club books. Yeah. And it's the ones we're looking for the same, but the money is dirty.
He's like, what this are you, fucking dog. Stupid, you little asshole? That's just a and regular like, book.
Got
you
got it on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-oh, retro, the gang is back, and because they figured that they were just throwing him for a loop, and they send him to the warehouse, but he's actually there. So they figure he's in there, that Reagan's in there. They split up, one in the front, and one group in the back. Like, it's like a polyamorous wedding night. Ayo! I don't know. Fuck. So they catch Reagan and Mac. And Reagan says, you're looking very successful. And Sal says, you're looking for what exactly? He says he's there to look for the laundromat books, blah, 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 looking for the cover-up. And with this knowledge, Sal figures he has to kill him. Oh.
Yes.
They're going to kill. Yes. So they're gonna kill Reagan on this kid show. Reagan asks for a moment with the dog, to which Sal agrees. And Reagan gets into to a scrum of two, so he's having a little like huddle with the dog, and asks if there are any ideas. It's like, man, do something else, like pray or God knows, like I don't know, do something at that moment because you're gonna die.
Well, it's also the classic trope, right? We're gonna kill you. Can I talk to my dog first before you kill me? Yes, you may.
Yeah, I guess so, but. Then I'm with the killing.
Yeah.
Don't you get any good, funny ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Mac looks to the open window, and we have, you know what we know? We know it's hijinks because there's oboe music like.
Yes.
And I go.
I found this score so confusing. It's like a free, like it's, you know, like technically it's, you know, a serious situation. They're gonna take him downstairs and shoot him in the head, right? Like, and it's got like this bassoon that's just like,
yes, sound of hijinks.
You're just like, what? What is happening?
I love it. So Mac makes a break for it out the window. And the gang takes Reagan downstairs, so the dog takes off and gets away. They take Reagan downstairs, and we see Mac jump back into the window and follow them downstairs. Oh, and we are in a set piece coming up. So the gang,
this is why there's bassoon music, is because
yes.
Yeah, it's prepping you for what's coming up.
So downstairs, they're taking Timmy to this beautiful, like, it's not lit up, but it's because, you know, it's the daytime or whatever. It's a beautiful 1980 discotheque. And they go to the dance floor to shoot him. And I noted that I'm not a gangster, but I think that's a bad idea to shoot somebody on the dance floor. Like, I don't know. That's a bit weird.
Well, blood's got to be hard to get out of a dance floor, I would think.
I guess so. I don't know.
Well, especially if you want to open that night for disco.
Wasn't blood on the dance floor like a somebody had a song called
Murder
that?
On the Dance Floor. That's a real song. Murder on the Dance Floor.
Murder on the Dance Floor. There you go.
Yeah.
Maybe they were talking about this episode.
Yeah, it was by Sophie Ellis Bextor.
Ooh.
Yeah.
There you go. So they start pushing them back and forth like kids on a playground. And he said, let's see you dance. Like, really good. Like, this man's about to die. And they're like, yeah, we'll hurt your self-esteem as well. So Mac is sneaking by, and he goes up into the sound booth. He kills the lights, like shuts all the lights off in the place. They're like, hey, Timmy breaks free. And the guy, this one of the gangsters starts shooting his gun like randomly, like bang, 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 bang. And it's going off in all directions. And Max starts operating the effects board.
On perfection, this, I might add.
Yeah.
Oh, it, like, even timing is perfect. So we have a glitter drop. We have the strobe lights. We have a change of the music. We have a balloon drop.
We have fog machines.
Oh, so good. And in the confusion, Mac and Timmy stealthily take out a couple of the gangsters.
Well, and the criminals are, like, so discombobulated by everything that's happening. It reminds me of those, like, parodies or whatever where, like, you know, a woman turns around and she, like, sprays the guy with hairspray and he, like over-exaggerates, like, ah, my eyes or something. Like, it's like that. It's like they get hit with glitter and they're like, ah, oh, my God. And then they get
I'm
hit
blinded.
With balloons and they're like, ah, where are we? What's happening?
It's like if you're a professional wrestling fan, it's like when a wrestler gets water thrown on them. It's the,
The
overreaction. Yeah, like, yeah. It's like it may as well be acid, and it will the effects will last for 10 minutes.
Is this the best scene in television history?
It's definitely in the running.
I think it's there.
I'd like to be like on, like a fly on the wall in the writer's room when this was being conceptualized. Like, I don't know. Were they just like, okay, how are they going to get out of this? Like, disco.
I know. Balloon drop.
Listen, glitter takes a long time to get out of your hair.
What I'm wondering is, let's say that their end game was, if you're writing this episode, was we want to have, you know, a comedy escape on a nightclub dance floor. They've really taken a weird path to get here, too. Like, I would have never seen this coming. I love
that's how they get you.
Yeah, from the outside, this building looks like the most boring, like, office building in the world. But somehow they have the most bitchin' nightclub in the basement.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, this looks like any like old city hotel thing that like, used to be a hotel, and all it is like a like Stratford has these places, and you wouldn't think that they were bars. And you go in, you're like, well, fuck me, this is a bar. But it looks like a nondescript old building from the outside. It's incredible.
So Mac is back at the controls, and he lowers a light pole that knocks one of the baddies out. And, like, he puts on the craziest face, but, like, he stays on camera. He's like, ooh. It's pretty good.
Well, and also, when you say lowers the light pole and knocks the guy out, they don't even try to make it look realistic. If you're dropping something from the sky, right, you let gravity take its course and then it pounds the person on the head and they're knocked out. This thing is on a hydraulic system and it's just being lowered and it taps the guy on the head and he acts like an anvil was dropped on him. And I figured they were just like, look, we have no budget for effects. We can't act around this. Fuck it. Like, let's just take what we get.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the weight of a foam pillar at your prom.
Yeah.
Like there's no weight to it. And you can see it because it hits his head. It just touches his head, but it kind of moves back up. Like his head is stronger than the pole.
Yeah.
And he's still like, whoa, I'm not silly. So now it's only Sal left. And Timmy and Sal roll around and the fallen balloons on the dance floor fighting over the handgun. The music stops as one of the gang has taken over the sound booth and says, you're covered, Reagan. And Reagan puts his hands up. We see Mac jump back out the upstairs window. Like, there's a lot of back and forth through that freaking window. In the top of the club, and he goes down the fire escape. Back in the club, the gang has gathered their composure, and they're holding Timmy with his hands in the air. And he still has a smoke in his hand. Like, oh, yeah, it's pretty good. Unlit cigarette.
Bad, and they still good. Haven't shot him. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like bumbling crooks again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their plan, like, they fully intended on murdering him in the nightclub. That was their plan. They were about to do it. So then he gets into a fight with them, tries to escape, almost overpowers them. They get the advantage. They have the guns on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they changed their plan.
Yeah, that's right. So Sal wants the boys to get him some rope because they're going to take Timmy for a little ride out in the country. Bum, bum, bum.
And for everybody who obviously didn't hear our pre-podcast banter, we all threatened Alan with that too.
We really did.
Straightened him out.
Yes. And then I did a cop as Bjork impression. And I don't think that's on here, but
it's coming. You've got your chance very, very shortly.
Oh, yes, that's right. So meanwhile, out in the street, Max sees the same cop from the first of the episode, and he's writing some tickets. He runs up to him, grabs his ticket book, and the cop says, "What? You again? What have you got against me?" And it's very, oh my God, it's the craziest accent. You just have to watch it. If you don't believe me, watch the episode, please. So the cop takes Chase and into the hideout.
I need to ask questions again. I'm very, very sorry.
Yeah, no, please.
Okay, the dog stole the original ticket book. And this was a big enough issue that the cops abandoned a check stop to chase the dog. The dog dropped it over the fucking bridge. It's gone. Now, later in the day, he's just got another ticket book. And it's like, why was that first one so important then? Secondly, did they just say fuck it to the check stop? Because they didn't find the prisoner.
No, that's true.
So they were like, fuck it. There are cars parked illegally in this town. We have to take care of that. So now he's
checked at least five vehicles. He's not there.
Yeah. So now he's out issuing parking tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun. Like cops are, you know, pretty, they do lots of things. Like they'll try to pull, like they might be face to face with a escaped prisoner who was tried for murder. And also then have some lady or a guy yelling at them going, "What the fuck? I was there for 5 minutes. What the shit?" And I'm like, "You asshole." So same.
Yeah.
So we have the cop, and the cop says to the dog, "You can't go in there. It's private property." And proceeds to fall in through the window, accompanied by a harp flourish. Bring, bring, bring. Beautiful.
Uh-huh. And then pulls his gun for no reason.
Uh-huh.
What are you gonna do? Shoot the dog?
That's his plan.
What are you planning?
So Mac leads the officer to the basement, down to the club, who even falls down the stairs for no apparent reason. Like, he's really got a balance issue. Well, like, this guy should be on.
He's got an inner ear problem from being outside too long.
I mean,
yeah. Come on.
You say fell down the stairs. Like, he rolls down the stairs. Like, I don't think, it clearly wasn't this actor. They had a stunt person whose, like, main stunt was falling downstairs. Because he is fucking rolling down a full flight of stairs with a gun drawn.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. So, he comes, he stands up, and he's like, "Oh, you scared the life out of me." The baddies all put their hands up, and the cop says he's looking for a dog. And he can't understand why they have the hands up. He's pointing his gun and says, "Oh, it came out of my holster when I came through the window."
I also have to note, okay? Remember, please, the criminal organization in the town is about to murder somebody in the basement of their club, right?
Mm-hmm.
This fucking clumsy, stupid fucking cop falls down the stairs.
Uh-huh.
And as he's stumbling to his feet, the four bad guys with their guns immediately throw their guns down and put their hands up. They're mm-hmm. like, "We surrender to you. The fucking badge is stronger than the four of us."
Yeah. This is true.
Yeah, no fucking way.
Sorry, let's kind of jump into this. You know what he sounds like? Do you know when those like news reporters have been caught sort of like having vocal type seizures on TV? And their voice starts to like waver and go wonky. You heard that? Like when they're like, "Oh," that's what his voice sounds like.
So beautiful, you mean?
Well, like angels singing.
Absolutely. So we have a back and forth. to keep with a bit of, yeah, this is a bit of like Abbott and Costello. So we're going to get into a few of these in the next couple of minutes. So we have a back and forth. Keep the gun on them. No, he's an escaped convict. No, keep the gun on him. These guys are killers. And the gun goes back and forth. So he's pointed to him.
Well, and the cop is like, escape convict. And then he's like, killers.
Yeah, he's legit taking suggestions from them all on what should happen.
Yeah.
And I only found out on the second rewatch that the name of the cop is called Flanagan. But I wrote in my notes, this is a type of thing where he's like, oh, you've really gotten yourself into a jam now, haven't you, O'Malley? Like, that's okay. Really what I thought. But his name is Flanagan.
It's actually Fanagan. No L.
Fanagan. Oh, sorry.
Fanagan. So this, good. Thank you. The cop has a name. So this
the cop has a name. He has a name.
He's a person.
The actor's name then is Alan Royal or Royale.
Yes.
And he is originally from Montreal. So that might help to explain why the accent is strange.
Fucking accent?
Not at all. There is not a hint of French in all the things that are coming out of his mouth.
He might be trying to cover a French accent, I guess, possibly. So other places that you might have seen this actor, he was a recurring character. Well, probably you guys didn't watch Falcon Crest, but I used to watch it with my mom. So
fantastic.
It was like a primetime soap opera, like Dallas kind of thing. Like, yes. Or Dynasty. Yeah, anyway. Falcon Crest. So he was on Falcon Crest. He was also on a show called Night Heat as a recurring character. So you might have seen him then. And he actually appears in 6 episodes of The Littlest Hobo as various characters. Ooh. So maybe we'll see him again.
Oh, I hope so.
Maybe we need to track his hobo arc. That's what we need to do in these episodes.
Mm-hmm. So Reagan comes up with a plan and tells the cop this, keep us all covered and call headquarters for help, which he does. Slight flash forward. And we have police lieutenant, and who is it but the Canadian, by way of America, one Louis Del motherfucking Grande.
National treasure.
National treasure. I think he's from Philadelphia originally. He came and he did a show, a famous Canadian 1980 show called Seeing Things, where Louis motherfucking Del Grande would see crime happened before it actually happened, so he was like psychic
it's
or
such
something.
A good show. I've talked about it before, but it's such a good show. It's one of my favorite Canadian shows from the 80s. And it's like, unfortunately, I haven't been able to find it on like DVD or anything like that. But if anybody ever has the opportunity to get a collection of Seeing Things, then definitely pounce on that because it is an amazing show.
Do you know how come he moved to Canada?
Oh, is it diddling related? I hope not.
It's not diddling related. He was
free healthcare.
No, okay, but here's a hint. Tim, you would be the best person to guess what drew him here.
Clown college.
I don't think that clowns attend this festival.
Ooh, the Stratford Shakespearean Festival.
That is correct.
Mm. Ooh, he's a thespian of the Avon River.
Yeah.
Wow. There, and there's a bit of a, again, it's a bit of a routine. Like, he goes down the line, and he's like, these are killers, and this is an escaped convict, and the dog took the ticket book, so he's getting the story straight. And the cop explains while pointing the gun at them, and Louis Durand says, what are you, a madman? So he's like talking and pointing his gun. Like it's fantastic.
Well, and also, so he's allowing all these fucking thugs to stand around in the room while they do what I believe is an illegal search, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, do they have a warrant?
This is how investigations work.
Remember, the cop, this all started with a cop yelling at the dog, that's private property, before he goes inside. So he knows that they shouldn't be there. Also, so maybe the 4 guys in the gang can stand there. But there is an escaped convict in the room. You don't cuff them?
No, they're letting him help them search.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is how investigation... investigations work.
Yes.
I think best part of this scene, did anyone notice that when he told him to put his gun away, he was still pointing his fingers like a gun?
Yes, I did.
That was the best part of the scene.
Perfection. So Louis Del Grande is going to shake down, the lieutenant is going to shake down these gentlemen. He says, they're going to give me a little color. So I'm figuring they're going to, you know, blade. That's a wrestling thing.
Yes.
Sorry. The lieutenant moves down the line to interrogate. Reagan says, this guy killed our other partner, Wally, and frame me. And then Louis says, because this is how justice works in Canada, apparently. You told that story in court. No one believed you. So why should I believe you now? Standing at a darkened discotheque. Reagan says, now I know what the motive is. And he's using the club to launder mob money. And Wally found out about it. And then he goes like this. He points at the lieutenant and goes, like as if he shot him. Like he does this spot sound, like like the handgun, like not a handgun but his palm, and he goes great. Timmy makes a deal for the lieutenant to search the joint, and if the books and the evidence aren't here, he goes back to the can, which is totally like that's how justice works. It's like, because often we have here in Canada, like if the cops come in looking for like drugs or guns or money or something, so you say, look, it's like this. If you find the drugs, I go to jail. If you don't find the drugs, I go free and you never come back again. So, yeah, it's good.
So Tim is arguing for his innocence in all of this, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's his argument. I mean, let's say it's true and he wasn't the murderer, which I think we're going to find out he isn't. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
But
you ruined it.
He's just this totally innocent guy hanging out with this gang of thugs who are laundering money that he knows about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Check. So upstairs, the cops are searching with the criminals sitting in the room. There's files everywhere. Sal is sitting on the couch and he's nervous. And Mac sees Sal eyeing a Betamax tape on the entertainment center from across the room. Like, it goes back several times. Cut to the dog, cut to Sal. Cut to the dog, cut to Sal. And back, and he's watching where his eyes are going. I don't know. I just try in the run of a day to stop my dog from jumping in a ditch and eating poop. And this dog is like watching rapid eye movement. Like, come on, Linda. So Mac picks up on this, and he picks it up and gives it to Louis Del Grande, the lieutenant. And Sal says he takes his tape and says that the tape is the show of the week to ensure that it's up to club standards. So they put it in the player, and I think it's Johnny Felt. And does anybody want to explain what the music is like for this?
It's just, I didn't even hear the music. I was just a close-up of some musician's face singing.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's.
I hope somebody remembered the lyrics.
Oh, it's something about something, a reactor in down the thing. And it's like this guitar solo, but it's like, it's really off-key. It's really good. I enjoyed it. It's bad music and nothing happens, but there's another tape that gets identified, and there's a bit of a back and forth here, and I didn't really see. It's not really great editing what happened. Like, the dog picks up another tape, and it's one with different numbers on it, and they ask, Reagan says, well, what is this with the numbers? Like, Sal, what's going on? So they put it in, and it's basically a blue and white Jeopardy-type screen with all the money payoffs of the people, and it's the evidence they needed, because that's how you, I guess, keep it, like, not in a book but on a Betamax tape, like a VHS
tape.
This
proves everything.
I just so many questions. Like, I don't I'm not even going to go into them. Like, it's pretty clear what all the fucking questions are here.
Like, can I reverse for a second? We didn't talk about the point where the lieutenant or the detective wants the dog to stop looking around, and Tim goes, give him a second. Maybe the dog knows something we don't. And I wrote down, no shit.
The dog is the smartest person in this room. Also, now they're a person.
Yes.
So that's it. That's the evidence that was needed. And Sal gets led off to the cop car, and Louis Del Grande says, book this creep. So nothing's proven. Like, all the evidence is there. So,
yeah, I'd like to point my train of thought. Just, I wrote a few little things here. I'd like to point, once yes, I found please. The tape, I wrote, what is this? A VHS with a screen of numbers. What does it actually prove? Now he's arrested and the other charges are dropped? The fuck is going on? Like, the screen shows nothing. It's just numbers with people's names.
Well, and also,
and why would they have these numbers on some VHS? What is this?
Also, it's 1980, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can put numbers on a screen and somehow get that onto a television these days with ease.
Yeah.
You would need a production studio to do this as well. Like,
this isn't how they're keeping track of their laundered money.
Yeah, and then what's going to happen? Like, don't you... Usually you write things down. And again, 1980, everyone. They don't have Excel, right? Like, they're doing everything... Normally you would do your math on paper. So putting it on a television screen doesn't help you unless you're going to draw your math on the television screen.
Oh, do you think there's a cut scene where the dog, like, has to sort out all the wiring to hook up the TV to the VHS? Like, oh, that's the red. No, the red cord is the yellow is the audio. You got to put it in differently. And what do you do with that? That's a green one. I know there's no green cord, but you got to put in the black cord. Like,
turn on channel 3. Channel 3.
I think the dog took the ledger from the beginning of the show, kept it. Had it transcribed onto a whatever.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. What do you mean? Had it transcribed.
Yeah, he typed it in himself.
Did it himself.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah. Did it himself.
Yeah.
And
he could have paid somebody, though. He could have taken some money out of that ticket booklet and, like, paid somebody to transcribe it, maybe.
Or he threatened someone with a speeding ticket if they didn't do it.
You know, promised to rip up their ticket.
For the sake of argument, say that this does prove that he's been laundering money, right? Like, this literally has no, definite implications on a murder trial. Like,
in this town, it does.
Well, I definitely shouldn't get the Tim Regan guy off the hook.
Well, and we'll see what getting off the hook looks like in a second.
Yeah. Timmy asks the lieutenant for a cigarette for a job well done. And he sits down to smoke the cigarette, and Mac comes over and takes the cigarette out of his mouth, to which Timmy says, right, I'll quit. And Mac sits back, happy.
And he says,
roking is rad.
You all wish that he took the cigarette and, instead of saying quit, put it in his mouth and fucking lit it.
So we see the lieutenant and Timmy leave the building with a glad everything worked out and a handshake. Timmy gets into the cop car with orders to drive him to. Now, Louis Del Grande says to the present, but it's the precinct. I think he's trying to say. But I don't think he pronounced it properly. Anyways.
I don't think that's what he said.
Does Timmy know he's actually taking a left instead of a right and going back to prison?
No, that's not what he said. I don't think.
He said,
take him to the prison so that he can pick up his stuff and leave, is what he said.
Oh,
which is, okay, look, if you're in prison and they find out that you didn't commit the crime that you're in prison for.
Mm-hmm.
You don't walk out the door that second.
No.
Particularly, like, oh shit, we were wrong. Here's your stuff. You're free to go. It doesn't work like that.
Bye.
Sorry.
Especially when you escape. Like, if you escape and then prove your innocence, they're not like, you were right. Let's go pick up your shit and you're on your way. Like,
Yeah. So, we're not pulled out of the parking lot yet of the club, but here comes Mac, and he drops the ticket booklet into the cop car window. And he's like, oh, hey, it's just good. And Timmy says, as Lilith Hobo walks away, see ya, Mac. And the music, yeah. And that's the end. That's the episode. That's the masterpiece that was this episode.
Yeah, Mac is on the dirt road walking away from all this shit, just ready to go to the next thing. Doesn't give a fuck. Like,
no. He doesn't. His job's done.
I love how he's the smartest dog, but as soon as the mission is done, he's like, fuck off, everybody. I'm out. Yeah.
Rolling Stone, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
Oh, man. He must have so many, like, dog children everywhere. And he's just
That's
like,
why he's got to keep moving on.
He's just like, bounce. I'm paying no child support. And he's so smart. He knows how the child support system works. And he's like, no way, man. So what are some thoughts about this gem?
Listen, this was a 10 out of 10. This was the best 24 minutes of television I watched this week.
I must say, I'm still partial to the first episode we reviewed. That one was so great. But this one is obviously almost as good.
It's fucking terrible. But again, like, hear me out. You have to watch it. And I would watch other ones. Like, it's I guess it's in the so bad it's good category, but it's really, really fucking bad. Like, it's bad.
Oh, it really is. I don't think I smiled more, though, than I did during this 24 minutes. Like, it was so funny, the whole thing.
I don't know if my parents watch this with me. Like, I watched it because I'm, you know, when I was a kid, as we all did, not giving a fuck about any of these issues. And I'm wondering if my parents were there and was just like, this show's so stupid. Our son's going to be so fucking dumb. Like,
and they were right.
Damn it.
I was thinking the same. Like, my parents must have been like, she just watched that and she's fucking crying about the dog leaving.
Like, what were your other options at this time? Like, rescue 911 or something? Like,
yes.
No.
Yeah.
Unsolved. The best they had to offer in Canada.
But was this before, like, a time of pre-ironic, like, knowing things like, oh, that's so ironic? Like, just watching things for pure entertainment?
I would like to know, like, if I could have interviewed one of the creators or one of the writers, one of my first questions would be, did you write this ironically, or did you think, like, you're doing a serious job and this is the best you can do?
I've watched a few episodes of this to get to this episode, and they were all winners. But I find any type of bad guy in it, they really turn it up. And they must be told to, like, yeah, like, Sal is like this, eh? Like, really turns it on. And there was a character like that in every episode I watched. And so I think it's, like, almost that, like, radio play vaudevillian type thing where it's like, oh, he's the boo, that's the bad guy. So I think there's that element of it. It's not meant to be, like, serious or anything. It's meant to be over the top.
Like, I mean, it's a kids show. Like, yeah. It was made as a kids show, right? Like, but I this episode was, like, suitably bananas.
Yeah, incredibly bananas.
Like, I have a feeling if you, like, I mean, the show's a little bit formulaic, right, with how it operates. You know, it's there are standalone episodes, the dog arrives, it gets named by somebody that decides to help, it saves the day, and then it moves on, right? So I could imagine that, like, not all of the episodes could be as bananas as this one, potentially. You know, there might be ones that are a little bit more sort of mild in terms of what the dog is accomplishing. Like, I'm assuming for every episode he's not getting thrown out of a plane or
babies eating raw meat,
you know,
rat poison.
Oh yeah.
Controlling the disco what a show. Or whatever it is, you know, like, I'm sure there's some that are slightly more mundane if you watch the entire series. So I feel like this is a good choice on Death.
I've watched a few. Well, just to dip into the ones that you didn't get to see, one, he convinces a boy to win a race, to get back on the track and field team because he's going to quit. And the dog goes over with the bag and he goes, look, Ma, he wants me to stay on the team. Going, oh, wow. That's an extrapolation of an action. Another one, he follows a balloonist into the woods, an old man, and he takes care of him. And I don't know. Yeah, he keeps him alive, and he's like all this stuff, but it's not as it's yeah. And there's a number of them. I watched a number of them.
A balloonist?
Yeah, like a hot air balloon, like an old man. And he's like,
they had a hot air balloonist, and they didn't put the dog in the hot air.
Oh no! If you look in the titles in the opening of the show, there are shots of this hot air balloon. You don't see the dog in it, but you've got to assume
that is the episode. Yeah, where the episode that says who it was written by.
Keeping an old man alive in the woods. I was just like, what? That's a missed opportunity.
He must land the hot air balloon himself. Like it must be.
Oh yeah. Oh. Yeah. Does he go up in the hot air balloon? You better believe he does. Oh, yeah. Does he control the controls of the hot air balloon when the old man becomes incapacitated? Yeah, thank you. Of course he does.
When you look at the IMDb ratings of most of these episodes, and I know sometimes people vote them sarcastically, but they're all routinely in the high sevens and low eights. Like, that's like, they're not fucking around.
Also, if you want to hear more of these episodes, please write into narbosandbroomheads @gmail.com and say you want to hear these things because they are fun to review and watch.
I think I mentioned this the first time we reviewed, but there is a podcast dedicated to The Littlest Hobo called The Littlest Podcast. And I haven't listened to it, but I'm going to start because I would love to hear somebody else's take on this.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for another lovely episode, our side road to our Narbros and Broomheads podcast and for The Littlest Hobo. And, please watch this episode if you have not. It's called The Escape. And, I've been Ted at SayWa3 on Instagram Machine. If you want to come see me and look at pictures of Linda, that's right, Linda, Instagram, SayWa3. Let's pass it over to the C note in the O town. Who is that?
Holla. It's just me, that hoe. Courtney.1293 on to IG. Over to Slip.
You just said who I am. Slip with five eyes or Slip. Yeah, all of our podcast shit at Narbos and Broomheads Podcast on Instagram, at Narbos Podcast on Twitter. And as Ted said, narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Send in your requests.
Oh, you got Folly T here. We'll just keep doing what I'm doing. Arlo?
You can follow me on Instagram at @ARLOESCOTT, and I'll try to be healthy for next time.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, get on that. Get your shit together.
Seriously.
We've had a larf, and we hope you've had a larf and a harf. We'll see you next time on the Narbos and Broomheads show.
Bye.
Just clowning around.
Well, I just said I don't get my love. I would never do my homework. I would stay up late and dream about Kylan. I would never get girls out of my house.
Maybe I would.
I would walk around the cafe cut just to get caught my dreams. Everyone thinks I'm so good. Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.